You're listening to Rotary Radio UK, where we're on to the second part of the podcast of The Last Corinthian. This is a conversation between me and cricket author Mike Thompson, who's in the studio with me. And we're resuming the conversation with a little bit more about what a nice guy Mike Smith was. Mike Smith is just a very nice man.
He's a lovely chap, actually. He's an absolute prince. Mm. He is kind, he's generous, he's got impeccable manners. He is incredibly modest. When I told him what Boycott had said about him, he said that he'd said what a brilliant captain he was and so on. He said, that's a bit over the top, isn't it? But he's a thoroughly nice man.
Yeah.
And I mean, I can a bit later on tell you about one or two of the things his teammates have said about him,
yes.
Endorse that.
We'll certainly get to that. You know, in the time that he was playing, overseas tours were quite full of sort of what you might call up-country games.
Some of them,
There's sort of an exhaustive analysis in the book with the statistics and reports of the games. I wonder how you managed to compile all of that.
Well, my main sources for the book were the oral conversations I had with ex-cricketers from that era. I also used Wisden extensively,
right,
which has got a record of virtually every match ever played.
Yeah.
And I also used a lot of cricket books, about 40 or 50 cricket books. Some were biographies of people, but some were actually accounts of different tours to get the facts. For the tour of Australia that Mike led in 1965-6, I relied quite heavily on Ken Mackay, Slasher Mackay's book about that Ashes series, which was a very good read. For the South African series, I think a couple of prominent writers covered that. I also read Trevor Goddard's, he was the South African captain,
yeah,
his biography, which covered that tour in some detail. Yeah. An interesting thing happened in that, another interesting thing happened on that South African tour. I'm sure anybody who's been following this year's Ashes will recall the incident where David Bairstow was run out after he walked down the pitch to do a bit of gardening.
Yes.
A very similar thing happened on that tour with Mike Smith. Mike did exactly the same thing, mm-hmm, walked down the pitch to do a bit of gardening, and Peter van der Merwe, who was fielding at leg slip, threw the wicket down when Mike was out of the crease. And the umpire wrongly gave Mike out because in that case, it wasn't quite a parallel situation, because in that case, the wicketkeeper had passed the ball to Peter van der Merwe, so the ball was dead.
Yeah.
Peter Parfitt, who was the non-striker at the other end, said, for God's sake, this was to John Goddard, the ball was dead. And Mike was already almost off the field.
Yeah.
Apparently Goddard, sportsman that he was, sprinted to the boundary to recall Mike before he actually left the field, because I think if he'd left the field, he wouldn't have been able to come back. Mm. And so he was reinstated, unlike the Australian situation where nobody talked about recalling Bairstow.
No.
In fact, they were all quite happy to see him go.
Yeah, yeah. The way he bats, that's probably understandable.
But a different era of sportsmanship, I think.
Mike Smith's career really went from sort of the era of gentlemen and players right up to the early stages of the one-day game.
It did indeed. In fact, Mike actually captained the last ever gentleman and players match for the gentleman.
Just explain for people who don't understand what
the gentleman, and players was basically the difference between amateurs and professionals. It was a game that had been started in the early 19th century, actually, by the subject of my book, Lord Frederick Beauclerk, when the amateur players of England, the best amateur players in England, played against the the best professionals, and usually there were about two games a year, one at Lord's and one at the Oval. Sometimes there was also one at Scarborough at the festival. Eventually, you know, as socially things equalised, the amateur became a bit of an anachronism in cricket. I mean, there were ridiculous situations. I mean, Mickey Stewart, who I interviewed, told me that Mickey Stewart played as a professional, actually, all his career. But when he was appointed captain of Surrey, the Surrey committee insisted that he still change in the amateur dressing room and kept away from the rest of the players.
Yeah.
And the amateurs in those days used to come out of the pavilion, and the professionals used to come out from a different exit onto the field. And, you know, it was a kind of class distinction.
Yeah.
But in the end, the amateur was a dying species. Yeah. And in the end, I mean, they probably could hardly raise a team.
Because
there weren't that many of them left. Mm. But it was a tradition, usually, in the 1950s and 60s, to appoint the captain of a side as an amateur.
Yeah.
I mean, Len Hutton, I think, was the first professional captain appointed for England.
Yeah.
Previously, Wally Hammond, who had played for England as a professional, became an amateur so that he could captain England.
sounds ridiculous.
It does.
Yeah.
There's a very good book written about the death of amateurism by a guy called Charles Williams, Lord Williams, a Labour peer in the House of Lords, but he was actually Mike's captain at Oxford in his second year at Oxford. He was a very good cricketer himself, Charles Williams, played for Middlesex a bit after leaving Oxford, but he's written several important biographies, one of Don Bradman, several of important European leaders, but he also wrote a book about the death of amateurism in cricket, which is a very good read, actually.
Yeah, certainly one to follow up.
Mm-hmm.
Right, so we've said that this career lasted until the advent and the early days of the limited overs game.
Yeah, that's right.
Mike then took the opportunity. He actually retired twice, didn't he?
He did, yeah. He retired, first of all, in 1967, after having captained Warwickshire for 11 years, and he went to work for a chap who was the chairman of Coventry City. He worked in this chap's firm, Derek Robbins, but Derek was a larger than life character, and in the end, I mean, you know, he basically hired Mike because of his celebrity.
Yeah.
And he wanted to use him in marketing and so on more than Mike was willing to do. Mike is quite a retiring chap, really. He's not a salesman by nature, and he's not a self-publicist.
No.
And in the end, I think he wanted Mike to stand for selection for the selection committee of the MCC to pick the England team. Mike didn't want to do that. He said, "I'll never get home if I do that." He also wanted Mike to put himself up as a candidate for the latest Australian tour. And by that time, Mike had got three children, and he didn't fancy spending another winter away from his family. So he wasn't keen to do either of those two things. So in the end, you know, they decided to part company.
Yeah.
And Mike went back to playing for Warwickshire in 68 and 69 he missed. He went back in 1970 and played for a further 6 years under Alan Smith's captaincy. And Alan told me, Mike came to him one day and said, would you mind if I came back? And Alan Smith said, "I was only too glad to have him back," he said, because he was such a prolific scorer as a batsman. And he played under Mike. He played under Alan Smith for the next 6 years. Mm. In fact, for the next 5 years, because then Alan Smith retired and went into cricket administration, and David Brown, who was an England fast bowler who played for Warwickshire, took over the captaincy for the last year of Mike's career.
So what after he'd retired, what did he do?
In 1972, he actually opened the squash court that I mentioned earlier, which I and my wife were members of. And he ran that for about 14 years, I think, very successfully. It was a very successful squash club. Squash was booming at the time, and it was the place to be in the early mid 1970s. He ran that for several years, for 14 years, I think, altogether. And then he sold it on to a hotelier. But he then, after he retired, he was then asked to manage a couple of England tours overseas. He also, you know, served as chairman of Warwickshire. And he actually relinquished the chairmanship of Warwickshire mainly because his son Neil was developing a career with Warwickshire, and he didn't want to be accused of any sort of nepotism.
No, that's
so true. He then drifted out of the game.
Yeah. So it's a fascinating book. You'll be absolutely delighted to know I have read it from cover to cover.
Good.
And I've looked at all the pictures as well. If people listening in want to get hold of a copy, how do they do that?
I have I did a book signing with Mike at Edgbaston about 2 weeks ago, and I've got a number of signed copies signed by Mike and myself available for sale at £25. Anybody can purchase a copy if they contact me by email on mike@speaklanguages.co.uk. And send me their address. I will arrange for them to be sent a copy.
Okay.
mike@speaklanguages.co.uk.
I'm immediately jealous because my copy's only signed by you and not by Mike Smith.
Yeah, I could probably arrange for Mike's signature if you want.
No worries. Okay, so for you, Mike Thompson, what's next? Is there another book in the pipeline?
Not at the moment. It's quite an exhausting, solitary process in some ways, writing a detailed cricket book. But I'm sure I will have some other literary endeavour at some stage. But
yes.
I haven't decided
on
anything in particular, whether it be... If it was about sport, it would be about cricket.
I may decide to
try something else, maybe a biography of somebody in another field. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, listeners may be interested to know that Mike and I were business partners for 11 years. So there's always the confessions of a city recruitment consultant, in terms of amusing incidents and frustration.
Yeah,
I think we could probably fill several volumes. But Mike, it's been absolutely fascinating. Thank you very much for coming in. And thank you also to Jenny Thompson, who I'm sure has done a great deal of support work behind the scenes.
Well, in fact, not only that, she proofread the book very thoroughly.
Yeah.
Jenny is very good at picking up on any mistakes I make, not only in my literary career.
She's also been sitting very quietly reading another book while we've been doing this podcast. So Mike and Jenny Thompson, thank you very much for coming in. The book is The Last Corinthian, and it's written by my colleague and good friend Mike Thompson. It is, I can tell you, a fascinating read, and it is available directly from Mike. I would urge you to get yourself a copy. We're making this recording just at the end of September, so get in quick because they will make ideal Christmas presents for anybody who is interested in cricket. Mike, thank you very much for coming in.
No, you're welcome.
After we finished the main recording, Mike and I sat and chatted, and he read out a couple of excerpts from the book, which we're going to put on to the end of this podcast. And again, this is really demonstrating what a nice guy Mike Smith was.
This is what Tom Cartwright said about him. Tom Cartwright, although younger than Mike, had already been with Warwickshire for 5 seasons before Mike arrived to take over the captaincy from Eric Hollis in 1957. He brought about a great improvement, said Tom. Mike was a nice bloke to play for. He appreciated other people's abilities and he let them get on with it. His team was always happy. You could never fathom Mike. He's an enigma. He never courted glamour. It's not his style and he's never had it. And therefore he's never had the recognition of how good a player he was. If somebody had said to me while I was playing, you can pick any team to win the championship next summer, out of all the county cricketers you've seen, he would be my first name down, without any question. Nobody played like he did on bad pitches. When you meet him, he's vague and you think he's having an off day or putting it on. But when you saw him with a bat in his hand, he was electric.
And just to finish off, this is an anecdote involving several Test cricketers and some wildlife.
When they were playing at Port Elizabeth, Boycott, this was Boycott's first tour. Boycott was very introverted and quite shy then, and would spend a lot of his time in his room sort of thinking about his batting rather than joining the others in the bar and socialising. And Bob Barber said he took it upon himself to try and bring Boycott out a bit and used to go up to his room and make him come down and join the others. On one occasion, on the rest day, Barber organised for them to go to a safari park about 100 miles up the coast from Port Elizabeth. They took their cameras with them. They had to leave about 4 in the morning, apparently. And they got to this safari park. Incidentally, the game warden, the head warden, was Ian Player, who was the older brother of Gary Player by about 8 years. And in fact, apparently he cut Gary Player's first golf club from a branch of a tree and taught him the rudiments of the game. But anyway, Ian Player said, look, he said, they brought the cameras. He said, we'll find a rhino and I'll get it to charge me. He said, and you can go and stand at sort of square leg and film it charging me. He said they're practically blind, he said, so if I stand still it won't be able to see me, so I won't be in any danger anyway. So fair enough, they located a rhino. Ian Player positioned himself and the rhino started to charge him, but about halfway through the charge it suddenly stopped and turned and started to charge Boycott and Barber. And according to Boycott, Barber was first up the nearest tree. According to Barber, it was the other way round. But it definitely happened, because Bob Barber told me that anecdote, and I later rang Boycott and said, or emailed Boycott and said, Barber's told me about this anecdote, and I wanted to get your verification. I got an email from Jeff Boycott later that day saying it happened. Yeah. Give me a call and I'll tell you about it.
So there you are, to finish a tale of tree climbing, safari and Test cricket. You've been listening to me, Steve Wood, here on Rotary Radio UK. My guest is Mike Thompson, and the book that we have been discussing is Mike's latest publication, The Last Corinthian. Thank you very much for listening. We hope that you'll come back again soon.